Millions of Canadian investors work with financial advisors. It is a massive business and has seen tremendous change in the last 10 years, which is why we've decided to spend some time focused on the future. Moolala is partnering with Advisors Edge on a multi-part series called The Decade Ahead, What's Next for the Financial Advice Industry. On our last show, we heard from the editorial director of Advisors Edge, Melissa Shin. In future shows, we'll hear from the CEOs of FP Canada, and Advocus. Today, we're joined by Fern Karsh, Policy Counsel at FAIR Canada. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Bruce.
A lot of listeners may not know what FAIR Canada is. Tell us what it is and what it's trying to do.
FAIR Canada is a not-for-profit charitable organization founded 10 years ago, around the time of the financial crisis. And its objective is to represent the voice of the retail investor and the individual shareholder and advance their interests and rights through public policy advocacy.
This series is focused on the financial advice industry. You're an advocate for individual investors served by that industry. How do you see FAIR Canada's role, and what's the dance with the industry itself? Is there a dance? I'm assuming there's a dance. Maybe not a cha-cha, but certainly a waltz.
Well, I think that the dance that goes on or that will go on with the financial services industry should look a lot like the dance that goes on between the regulators and the financial services industry as well. I think that we live in a cooperative, collaborative time where I think to accomplish objectives and certainly to accomplish public policy and political objectives, one needs to work together with all stakeholders, including governmental, non-governmental regulators, industry members, and our retail investor and individual shareholders' constituents.
One of your strategic priorities is to call for, I'm taking this quote from your site, call for reform of the client-advisor relationship and to push for better alignment of that relationship. What does that mean in practice?
That can mean a lot of different things. I think it's got to be put into context. So over quite a few years, we've been pushing for a move closer towards a fiduciary standard or a best interest standard as one example to help align interests. I think that's would be a, you know, major example of aligning interests. And what's happened over over a number of years now, that's an initiative that's been going on for, you know, essentially the long term, is a best interest duty eventually morphed into a more harmonized approach. It was something that the OSC was at one point willing to go alone with as a public policy move. And then in the interests of national harmonization, stepped a bit back from that, but went forward with client-focused reforms, which intended to achieve basically the same objective or similar objective with more targeted tools. So tools like suitability, conflicts, etc.
Technology is an enormous theme everywhere we look, everywhere we turn. And for the financial advice industry, robo-advisors is certainly the example that we talk a lot about. As you look ahead to the decade in front of us, where is technology going to play, and does it help or hinder your mission?
So to your first question, with respect to, you know, where technology is going to play, certainly the robo-advisors are, and I would expect them to be a continually growing segment. They're around $5.5 billion now, which is a small fraction of the $1.6 billion or so traditional mutual fund industry.
Trillion, yeah.
For the mutual fund industry, although, of course, robos do, to a very small degree, also sometimes offer mutual funds in their portfolios, although they're mostly ETF. Base, but that's a growing segment. That's anticipated to be growing at a rate of about 30% a year. And I think it links up really well with a lot of catalysts we're generally seeing. So in terms of demographic shifts, I would see robos as continuing appeal to younger generations like the digital native millennials and Gen Zs who are comfortable doing everything online. And the robos are, they're getting savvier and they're getting more mature. So mature maturity-wise, you know, it's been about 5 years now, so there's actual returns in history to see. There's a way to actually evaluate their model portfolios. I think that would be indicative of further growth coming in that sector because it's and at a faster pace because it's strengthening. There's more competition. There's more companies out there. They're well-financed and savvy. You've got, you know, the likes of Power Corp, you know, pushing Wealthsimple forward. They are also, you know, really competitive on fees. And I think that that's an easy sell to the general public. I think, you know, the average person investor understands the concept of lower fees and the impact that that would have.
What is after transparency? And I ask because there's been so much in the last couple of years about, well, we need to let people know what they're paying and how things work. And there's the know your client and all this communication. And yet it feels insufficient because I receive those proxy notices. I'm a personal finance guy. I don't read them. I barely open them. As you think about how you advocate for that individual investor, what's next after that? If we've achieved a certain degree of transparency, what's next?
Well, what's next after that is, you know, investors ultimately need to to some degree, take some charge of their own finances and documents. Mm. So with increased transparency, I'd say that there's also some obligation on investors to, you know, read and consume their CRM documents.
You looked me right in the eye when you said that. I need to read and consume my documents.
That's probably not the best way to put that. But, you know, from a legal perspective, I think the reality is, like, I am also a lawyer. And from a legal perspective, I could see there being, you know, investors actually have a tougher time going after advisors in a world of greater transparency and easier to consume and documents. And I think that the case law would be reflective of that, too.
How does FAIR navigate the federal, provincial, multi-regulator environment? It is very, very complicated when you look at all facets of financial advice. And how do you see FAIR's role in the next decade trying to influence in a way that makes a difference for your primary stakeholder, the individual investor?
Well, FAIR has always and will need to continue to advocate with respect to the rules and policies and practices of all of these regulatory and stakeholder groups, so your securities regulators and various SROs, we have a unique opportunity right now, both FAIR Canada does and Ontario more generally with respect to this review that's going to be going on of the overall of the Securities Act and the overall securities regulatory framework. So this question of the fragmentation amongst securities regulators and SROs, and the potential move to a federal regulator, the CMRA, is something that, you know, I would expect FAIR to also be opining on and wanting to have a public policy influence with respect to.
I want to leave with one last question, and it is this. What is your hope for the decade ahead? So as you think about the individual investors that you are advocating for, what is your great hope for where this will head in the next 10 years?
My great hope is that fintechs become a little bit more like financial institutions and financial institutions become a little bit more like fintechs. I think that on the former, I think that there is a great role to play in the interests of retail investors and individual shareholders with respect to robo-advisors and automation in terms of democratizing access to investing and investing advice for those that might not otherwise meet criteria or otherwise, you know, in any event, not access traditional advisors. But I also think that people expect and need slightly more full service advice in terms of all of your financial planning, tax, etc. So I think whether that's partnerships, or internalizing other services, tools, etc. And I think on the other hand, traditional financial institutions becoming more efficient and embracing technology and embracing automation and financial planning and other tools that, again, democratize access to proper advice on both sides. Mm. That would be one of my big hopes.
Fern, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Fern Karsh, policy counsel for FAIR Canada.